Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's show, I interview Julia Coney, wine writer and sparkling wine aficionado. She is one of the smartest people in wine working today. We have a pretty impromptu conversation about a lot of topics, social and wine-wise, and we get into it pretty good. Before that, this podcast is brought to you by SOM TV and our new show coming October 1st, Sip Trip. Sip Trip is a travel-based show going from the top to the bottom of Italy, hosted by sommelier Jeff Porter. It starts airing October 1st, and it is wonderful. Make sure you subscribe to SOM TV. $5.99 a month, $49.99 a year. We've dropped the prices, so there's really no excuse, and we have new content almost every single day. And to our current subscribers, we love you guys. Thank you so much. Without further ado, Julia Coney. Julia, welcome to the SOM TV podcast. How you doing?
I'm here on SOM TV podcast. Insane. I'm good. I am on, you're like my eighth call of the day, sixth or seventh call. Sixth or seventh glass of wine, considering.
I felt you and I had something special, and you've seen other people. I feel very hurt right now.
Yes. Yes. It's okay. It's okay. You have a glass. You have a bottle, and I have a glass. I have a few glasses.
What are you drinking right now? Let's start there, because okay. you and I are a little wound up. We've been on the phone since about 7:30 in the morning.
It's been a lot. I am drinking an insane pet nat from one of the natural wine stores here in DC called Domestique. I'm drinking a white Burgundy from Saint Véran. I'm drinking a red Burgundy from Marcinet.
Wait, what? And you're drinking multiple glasses of wine?
Yeah, why? Are you just drinking one?
That's, you're absolutely right. I have failed. I like this a lot.
Here's the thing. You have to have a bubbly. You have to have white and a rosé or red if you're talking to me. So you have one and I have multiple. I'm just breaking them out.
Okay, I love this. You have a very, it's kind of like a mixture of like a hipster lineup there. I mean, a hipster slash really refined collector lineup.
Well, bubbles bring the party. And I usually drink a lot of bubbly. I usually save my champagnes for like, you know, Friday and Saturday and Monday. Monday in my house is hashtag Champagne Monday. I drink a bottle of champagne every Monday. That's just how I feel. It's one of those things. So it is one of those days. I am working. So I, you know, am just exploring wine through different glasses and through different regions based on what my friends actually tell me to drink.
I love it. It sounds like you have the same kind of lifestyle I have, where you have to work while drinking all the time.
Yeah, but are we complaining?
No, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's, you know, it's it just is what it is. I mean, it's
the kids always drink. I find when you wake in the morning, if you drink 24 ounces of water, you drink 8 ounces of warm water with lemon, that whole like alkali in your body. Then you drink 16 more ounces of water. Then you can have coffee. But if you don't do that, you can't have anything that doesn't work. And then you start, you know, the liquid libation, you know, the liquid passport, as I like to call it.
Well, you know, I do like working in Europe, because if you order a beer or a glass of wine or even a bottle at lunch, nobody's like, what the hell are you doing?
It's also cheaper.
It's way cheaper.
It's way cheaper to have a glass of wine with lunch than anything else.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Well, it is. It's a pleasure to have you on. It's kind of a long time coming, I feel like. I think, you know, I've been a fan of yours for a bit here. You have some interesting waves in the wine world that I don't think a lot of people, maybe this is just where I come from. I don't think a lot of people know how influential you are in a lot of different areas. You've been a writer for, let's talk a little bit about your career. Just okay. A little bit about kind of where you came from, and I will try not to interrupt you too much.
So are we talking wine career, or just regular career? Like,
for me, wine. Let's go with if the regular career brought you into wine, fine.
The regular career brought me into wine. I tell people this all the time. I discovered wine in the late 90s, working for lawyers. I was a legal assistant and a legal secretary. I always say lawyers drink very well. It's their version of a pissing contest. I stand by that statement. Brought me from Houston, Texas to Washington, D.C. because I was just very curious of living in a different space. And I started writing a beauty blog in 2006, eventually parlayed that beauty blog into a freelance career in 2010. from 2010 wrote about beauty, 2016 decided to write about wine, and discovered that the wine world wasn't as open as it thought it was.
Really?
No, not really. And this is 2016.
No, I'm saying really. No, in the I really did.
I really did because I had great experiences around the world at different vineyards, different wineries. It wasn't until I did it as a career that I thought, this is actually very close-minded.
Okay, it's so hold on. Do you mean, I just want to stop you for one second. Do you mean as an African-American? Do you mean as a woman? Do you mean as a beginner in wine? Where do you mean that's not
an open? Well, to me, I wasn't a beginner in wine because I went to Bordeaux when I was 26 years old. So I'm not a beginner in wine.
Okay,
so fair. I don't look at that as the same as an American. Like, I went to Bordeaux as a consumer who liked wine. I went to France as a consumer who liked wine. I looked at wine as a career as being very dated, as a woman, as a Black woman, as a person who was very interested in working in this industry. And I just felt like in 2016, it didn't move forward as spirits had. Spirits, we know, was like, they embraced different cultures. They embraced hip-hop music. They embraced a lot of things. Wine was still on the back burner of that. And I just didn't understand why. It took me really delving into it because it was like, this has not changed, but how do I want it to change? Let's take a step back.
So you say spirits embraced different cultures, and I assume you're mainly speaking about the Black community or African Americans or.
Absolutely.
How did spirits do that?
When spirits realized hip hop culture was talking about them in music, spirits embrace it. There's a song. I mean, like, we have to talk about Diddy. Diddy made a song called Pass the Courvoisier. People started drinking Courvoisier.
Right.
If we think about what happened when a champagne producer was like, we don't care about hip hop and champagne, and Jay-Z came out with a champagne label.
Interesting, because I mean, Cristal's been, you know, rappers have been talking about Cristal since I was in middle school.
Exactly, but here's the thing: they talked about a champagne that most people had never heard of, most people had never experienced, but it piqued people's interest to say, if I get an opportunity, I would try it.
It's also expensive as shit. They also talked about, you know, Alizé and things that are not expensive too. So
everything in between, from the cheapest to the most expensive. But it piqued people's interest because the music brought people together. And that's what I always say. People love Black culture. They don't like the struggle. So I always say people like Black culture swag. They don't like the struggle. They don't. There's not a lot of white people like, let me raise my hand and say, I want to be Black for 24 hours. They don't say that. That's fine. But everybody wants to use the term ghetto, bae, canceled, woke, all the words we see on the internet.
Are you trying to tell me Elvis took Black music? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, we already know the truth. I don't even have to answer that because that's why you asked the double entendre question.
I know.
But what I'm saying is,
we're coming in hot. We're coming in real hot with this podcast.
We got to come in hot because this is the only way I know how to come in on this. But we also have to admit that, hey, people want to be part of this culture. And the wine industry just has been really late to that. But I also will give them credit. A lot of them are trying. With everything that has happened in the past 2 months, I have to give them an A for effort. Because if I don't do that, it's not my job as a journalist to say they're not trying. But when I came into the business, it was like, oh, you look like the help because you have on Black jeans, a Black t-shirt, a Black blazer, and you're here for a tasting of this amazing like wine, but you look like the lady who should be downstairs taking reception.
Did people actually say that to you?
Yeah, a guy told me I look like the help. And I will never forget that. It was November 2017 in Washington, D.C. at a very popular restaurant in Georgetown.
Wow.
So people who live in D.C. know which restaurant. It's an Italian restaurant. So you guys know what I'm saying.
I mean, it's not like D.C. is not filled with a lot of Black culture. I mean,
It is filled with the culture. But like, I'm not a native Washingtonian. I'm from the South. I've lived in D.C. now 15 years. But when we talk about wine, if you think about what wine is, think about it. There's a special glass. There's a special language. There's a special dialect of terms we need to know. That's not terms for a lot of people in different cultures. Black, Latino, BIPOC. If we just put everybody under that BIPOC umbrella for a minute. If we just put everybody there. But one of the things of it is like, but these are the same people who say, well, I love hip hop music, but I'm going to pour you this certain wine because I expect all black people to like this wine. I don't expect black people to know about these champagne producers. Oh my gosh, you know about Grower Champagne? Yeah, I do. Oh, that's fascinating. It's things like that. So for me, when I think about wine in general and how we're coming to it and what this new era of, you know, everybody wants to be an ally is.
Well, this new era, are you talking about like just like a month old era? You know, just like what's happening at the moment?
I think here's the thing. The movement has been happening the past 6 weeks has literally just shot it out of a cannon.
Yeah.
You have people who are really trying before this, and I give them props. I have talked to these people within the past 2 years before all this happened.
But I'll be honest, I didn't know that we were actually going to talk about all this on this podcast. I mean, part of me thought, you know, you and I are going to have a conversation about champagne. We're going to talk about your mentoring lots of other people. I mean, Shakira is joining the SOM TV family. You brought her up. And she's got a podcast called A Glass for Every Palate. And I don't think she could do that without you. And I think.
Oh, she could.
I understand. But you know how it goes when it comes to like, I mean, it is like as a filmmaker, there are 10 people that I literally couldn't be a filmmaker if they didn't come into my life. It's the same way. It's not like, it's not that, you know, I would have been a filmmaker and there might've been different people, but a lot of people owe you and your voice. And I kind of thought we were going to talk about that. I didn't. But I appreciate you going this direction. So I want to, let's go. Let's do it. I want to talk about your platform. You started this platform, and then I want to talk about how you think it's going to actually work and if it's going to work.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think I started the platform. For me, I think Dorothy Gator and John Brescia started the platform.
Okay.
I think when they started in 1998 with the Wall Street Journal, with the Tastings column, and I will tell anybody this, they started the platform. I am here because of Dorothy Gator. I am here because of John Brescia, her husband. I am here because
Do you want to say who Dorothy is, just so if in case someone's not heard of her?
Dorothy Gator and John Brescia are an amazing wine writing husband and wife. They started a column for the Wall Street Journal called Tastings in 1998 that ran for 12 years. I started reading that column because the lawyer I worked with gave me the column every Monday because he really paired wines for me and made me realize wine and food went together. Even though I studied abroad in France, and I would tell people all the time, I drank wine in France because it was cheaper to buy than a soda. that's why I like bought wine. Like, and people didn't realize that. Like, I didn't learn wine in France. I learned wine in America from this amazing, my boss, who's named Bob, who created a space for me to just talk about wine and introduce me. And so Dorothy, for me, is that person. Her and John wrote a column that wasn't about wine. It was about love and relationships and family and friends and heartache and heartbreak and love happened to be around a wine glass.
I mean, this is, you're literally speaking the language. Still in wine. That's the reason I want to. Yeah.
So I'm not talking about what happened like a year ago. This is the late 90s, but those things stayed with me. So when I moved into wine, I expected the way I felt about their column to be the way I wanted to be a professional. And it wasn't the case. So for me, I had to figure out how to navigate this new space of, this isn't a very welcoming community. And this is 2018, 2017, 2016, to where I wanted to have a voice. But I kept persevering because I felt wine was my legacy. And when you feel something is your legacy, you got to keep going, no matter what happens.
So can I ask you a question? Why is wine your legacy? Why? I mean, if you look at wine and you think it's not very welcoming and you don't see a lot of, you know, faces that look like yours in the industry, why is it this? Why did you choose wine?
It's an emotion that's almost hard to say. It's kind of like somebody asking you why you fell in love with some person. You can name the basic, oh, there's a great person, they're kind, they're generous. But for me, wine speaks of culture. It speaks of economics. It speaks of politics. It speaks of what is going on in the world. Wine tells a story that a lot of beverages do not tell. Wine speaks of place and people. It speaks of yearning. It speaks of desire. It speaks of heartbreak. It speaks of lust, in a way. All these things that we, you know, it speaks of all the you know, vices that we're not supposed to have. Wine speaks of that as well. But it, at the end of the day, it speaks of community. And wine is a communal product that has lost the sense of community.
And by lost the sense of community, what? How did it lose it?
It loses it because everybody is like, oh, well, you know, I'm assuming you don't drink this sort of wine. I'm assuming you don't know this. And when most people start in wine, no one knows a lot. That's why wine is ever learning. It's history. Think about it. Wine is history, it's science, it's geology. We're studying soils. We're looking at what has happened in the glass, what's happened in the vines, what's happened with the winemakers. It is like who left which business, which consortium, and when moved to another consortium. It's climate change. How many times do I wake up in April and wonder which vineyards got heat, got, you know, spring frost? It's climate.
Do you feel the community coming back with wine? Do you feel that it is?
I feel a new community is being created.
Oh, interesting.
I don't feel that it's coming back. I feel this new community has been created. And this new community has been created based on everything with the new civil rights movement that has happened based on the death of George Floyd. I really do. I think it's a new movement. And I will stand by that. I will stand by a new movement. And it's okay. And that's okay to say.
And so is this where your, you know, Black Wine Professionals, which I want you to talk about what it is you create. Did you create Black Wine Professionals? Is this something that is your brainchild?
It was my brainchild because I was exhausted after I did an Instagram Live. And where I decided that I had been traveling so much. I've been in a lot of beautiful regions. And a lot of people have said, I don't know many Black wine professionals. Not their fault. I'm not blaming that on any person. So when I say this, I decided if I created a listserv where if you need a person who is Black to come to your tasting, to come to your media events, to come to your media trips, you have a resource to go through. If you need to create, if you have an opportunity, a job, like we're going to do job listings come fall. A lot of these things are internal networking. How do we make this networking a little more public to people who have the skill set, but you may have never known? So it came about as it wasn't, you know, like I've been thinking about this for years. I started thinking about this at the wee hours of June 3rd. I'm looking like people are emailing me like, hey, I have this interview opportunity. If you want a person that's Black who knows about Provence, I got your person. You need a person that knows about Portugal? I have your person. So you can't say now, I don't know any person of color who doesn't know about XYZ region.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Why do I need someone who's Black to talk about Portugal?
Because everybody loves Black culture, but nobody wants to be Black. That's why you need it. Because everybody wants to know.
You're good at this.
I'm good at this, right? I'm saying this for a reason because people want to be, you know, they want to know. And also, too, the same voices are kind of getting boring. That's the thing. It's getting boring.
Well, just in my defense, I don't have a replacement for the host of this podcast, but I agree.
We need new voices. I want somebody who... to describe a wine to me, to make me want to buy it, right? Don't you? You don't want me to say, hey, Julia, you like champagne. What do you like about champagne? And I'm like, it just, you know, champagne's fun. I like Chardonnay. I like Blanc de Blanc. Don't you want me to be passionate and for me to say, hey, let me tell you about this grower. They got a horse that's driving this, like, you know, viticulture through. And then let me explain what I taste with this. I taste this crazy amount of Skittles and Starbursts that are bursting at the seams in my palate. And then I know if I have this dish, it makes you want to actually drink the wine than to buy it and sell it. Because there's a place for all of it. I always say there's a place for a tasting note. There's a place for a certain descriptor. There's a place for a certain article. But as we embrace these new wine enthusiasts based on, you have a lot of celebrities coming out with wine brands. You have a lot of, you know, celebrities who are making their own wines with different winemakers. Eventually, those people are going to want to branch out.
Yeah.
How do we keep those people who want to branch out? That's what I'm.
Well, let's for a second about Black Wine Professionals. So if you are, first of all, where can people learn about this? We should just say this now. And we're talking about the site.
Literally, blackwineprofessionals.com.
www.blackwineprofessionals.com.
Yeah. And also,
can anyone apply? Can anyone apply?
You can apply. That doesn't mean you're going to be chosen, because this is what I'm, and I will say this on record. I am looking for professionals. I'm looking for people who this is your livelihood. I'm looking for people who have put skin in the game. You've done certifications, because I also feel like being a Black person, we need certifications where some people may not. You need to have skin in the game. I need to know that you've done the work to create whatever it is you need to do, whether it's media, where it's marketing. And we're not listing just people who are SOMs or educators. We're listening marketing professionals. Even if you just say you work in finance at a winery, I want to list you too, because you're a Black wine professional. It doesn't mean that you're pouring wine to be a professional. It means you work in a field. If I said you're a healthcare professional, that means if you're doing billing, you're a healthcare professional. It's the same with wine. You have to have skin in the game.
I think what you're doing is wonderful. I mean, first of all, you also have, there's a number of people we work with that are amazingly a part of this. I mean, Shakira Jones and Miriam Ahmed, I think.
Oh, I love her. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these are people that, you know, we've known for a long time. And
you know why? I have people who want to change the world of wine. Because a lot of times I have these conversations and everybody, you know, we all get the emails, right? Oh, wine is not selling as well as XYZ. Wine is losing consumers between the ages of, you know why? We don't make this shit fun. We don't. We don't make it. It already is enough. Like,
it's unfortunate. It's probably going to take a lifetime to get wine just back to, you know.
Yeah. Think about, I want you to think about four years ago. Would you have ever seen as many articles you've read that champagne goes with fried chicken? 4 years ago, not five.
No, but I'm very aware of the fact for well before 4 years ago that fried chicken and champagne are fucking great together.
Well, man, you knew it, but it wasn't being written about. There wasn't the articles. There wasn't the social about it. There wasn't all this talk about the obscure thing champagne goes with, right?
Yeah.
What was painted? Champagne and foie gras, champagne and high cuisine. But that's that's not the way people eat. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love foie gras. Give me all the foie. All of it. And the champagne. But also give me kettle chips. Give me plain Lay's with Blanc de Blanc. And give me Ruffles with Blanc de Noir, because there's a different salt content. And I need to have them both. And I tell people this all the time. Like,
no, this is what I love about wine. It's so good.
You have to know the salt content of which champagne, because it doesn't taste the same, right? If I'm doing a beautiful rosé, like, I can have a lot of things with it. I can have a really funky cheese. I can have a sharp cheddar. I can do a lot of things. Guess what? Rosé and barbecue potato chips? Perfect pairing.
Yeah, that's I'm in on that. I like
5 years ago, we wouldn't have you and I would have had this conversation as friends, but people wouldn't have been writing about it. So how do we make this a consistent conversation?
Well, I mean, I think you're working on it. I mean,
I'm trying.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're working on it. I think, you know, hopefully, you know, look, we have a platform. I hope, you know, I hope that that helps. I mean, I hope SOM TV helps a little bit. I mean, the problem with all of this is it takes, it doesn't, you know, one person can start the movement, but it takes millions to make it happen. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that you have to spend so much of your talent doing what you're doing because of some shitty past behavior of human beings. I mean, it's unfortunate. It just is. I want to take this back to what is the wine? So you walked into an industry that you felt was unwelcoming. Mm-hmm. You decided, all right, I'm going to do the stuff I have to do. What was the wine that made you do that? Why did you put yourself out there the way you have? There had to be something. A couple wines,
okay.
A wine.
Okay, so I'm going to start. I was introduced to wine through California. I will tell anybody this. 1998, 1999, introduced to wine through Camus Clodoval. That's how I was introduced to wine.
Camus and Clodoval?
Camus and Clodoval. I'm from Texas. Barbecue. Had a pairing at one of the attorney I work with. He paired it with barbecue. It was singing. I could understand it. The fat, the brisket, all worked, right? No vinegar.
First of all, I love Clodoval. Oh. I just want to edit. My only interruption is I love that wine.
Exactly.
They're one right. of our episodes of Verticals coming up.
Let me tell
up,
you, so you put a brisket sandwich, a plain brisket sandwich, don't put anything on it. Get a brioche bun with Camus or Clodoval, Cabernet Sauvignon. You're going to have a great time. So I move into wine, right? And I'm thinking, that experience has to be like this. And it wasn't. But what I found was so many different people. And I will say this. Charles Krug, always had a good time.
Yep.
Always had a good time. Every time I went to that winery, had a good time. You know, and I was like, wow, this is actually fun, despite the other things that are happening. Mary Edwards, always had a good time. Red Car, always had a good time. Going in Sonoma, right? Just had a good time. I had really great times at places that I actually like to drink. It's so many, right? You think if you're going 29, so many places you can stop. Domaine Carneros, right? But I kept going because I was like, well, this is a communal product, right? If we want to talk about Jesus turned water into wine, like, how can we keep this going? So for me, I had to decide to either stick with it or let it go. And I decided to stick with it because I enjoyed the majority of people I met in the wine industry. And I will say that hands down. Some of the best people I've met since 2016, I'm still friends with, still keep in touch with, still like to talk to, still like to hang out with. They're just good people.
Yeah, I think it's almost like, I don't know if you went to church as a kid, but...
Oh, I grew up Pentecostal, so yeah, I went to church.
You grew up Pentecostal, huh? Pentecostal doesn't drink.
No, no one in my family drinks, but like me. I know, it's the crazy thing. I go home to my family in the South, and they're like, oh, did you bring wine? And they take photos of the bottle. They may take a sip. They don't drink it. And they're like, oh, like, tell me about it. They're interested in it, but they don't drink it.
I mean, this is even just another hurdle that is insane for you to get into where you're in. The fact that you grew up Pentecostal. I was relating church just basically on the fact that, like, when I think of my memories of being raised, I was Episcopalian. Well, you know, I'm about as WASPy as they come. But, you know, I was raised Episcopalian. And when I think about religion, I just think about the people. I think about how fun it was.
Exactly.
I think about how much I missed that. And that's the way it sounds like you're describing wine. You know,
wine,
I mean, it's
community.
Yeah.
Most for me, church was fun. I didn't have a bad church experience, even growing up Pentecostal. I had a great, I am friends with all these people. Every time when I switch to wine, they're the most, they retweet my stuff like they drink and they don't. They are just the nicest people because once again, it's community. That is what we have to get wine back as community. It's also a business, so I'm not negating that. And I always like to say that. Like, but we can make it a very beautiful business supporting community.
I will tell you, you know, myself walking in, and I know people who listen to this podcast are tired of hearing me say I made SOM, which I did. But when I walked into the wine world as a filmmaker and made SOM, I found what you're talking about. You know, I really did. I mean, I will tell you, I walked in and it, you know, DeLynn then and Brian then and Ian then and Dustin then and everyone else in that movie, they know way more now and they know what they don't know now, but they were my teachers and they were so welcoming and they were so embracing to the fact that I didn't know any of this stuff. I mean, I found that. I did. And it wasn't just them. It was Emily Wines and Laura Manick. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. I found that. And I, you know, Julia, I think it still exists. I mean, obviously I, you know, had come from a different background, but I like what you're saying, that it is being rebuilt and it's forming a new thing, because that doesn't say anyone else has to be left out. It's just putting more people in.
Here's the thing. I think, you know, and I've watched, you know, all the Saw movies. I personally own them because when I travel a lot, I don't sleep on planes. So I watch a lot of movies at home on my iPad. And those movies actually brought a lot of people to wine who were never curious about wine, who were never even interested in wine. And I talk to people all the time about that. Like, I watched this movie and I was like, is this what you're doing? I'm like, yeah, see, I don't do that. Like, I don't remember all that. But yeah, some of this I have to remember. But it's a talking point, right? And that talking point means I talk to you from the point about the movie. Then you contact me because you went to a wine store. Then you bought a bottle of wine. And now we talk about the wine. And now I pique your interest into another wine.
So you're saying you're talking about the films were just like sort of a starting point.
Yeah. I have so many people. It's a starting point for a lot of people. You know, the films came out after I was curious about wine, but everybody doesn't have a Bob who says, come to my house on Saturday. I'm having a barbecue. And he's doing Clos de Vaux. He's doing Camus. He's pulling out all this old BV wine. Everybody doesn't get a Bob. I am very blessed that I have a Bob who I still am in contact with. I still talk to him, who introduced me to these amazing wines. I didn't really drink like that in college. You know, a lot of people can say, well, I was in college. I'm like, didn't do that in college. It's okay, fine. But once I was out of college and I was working for this guy who was like drinking these crazy wines, this is at the height of Robert Parker, when Robert Parker was a physical paper being mailed to the subscribers. I remember those papers, and he would bring them to me every Monday. And we would get to the office early, and I'm an early riser before I started work. And I would drink coffee and read Robert Parker. Everybody won't have that experience, which is fine. But I take that as, wow, this is a beauty of this industry. I still look back on it 20 plus years later, like, this is great. So what I'm trying to do is have everybody have that moment. What is that moment for them? What is that moment where you want to be in this business despite everything that's happening? Because at the end of the day, I say this all the time. I am good at selling wine. I can sell wine to really a lot of people. I can sell wine very well. If the industry lets me sell wine, because I'm talking about stuff that needs to change, but I'm also talking about things that prohibits me from talking about selling wine.
I think, you know, the thing you just said is the most important, selling. I can't imagine brands don't want a larger audience. They don't want a larger group of people to sell to. I mean, I don't get this.
I think they do. I think they don't know how to navigate it. I think it's tricky. I think it's saying maybe we'll take a loss on this part, but maybe not on this part. I don't know what a lot of brands are thinking. I know what some of them are thinking. Some of them... But I also know I want to live in a world that have different voices. I want to live in a world and drink wine from people who actually want to change the way things have been going in this country for good. I want to be a part of that. It's not going to be easy. So you're going to have to take a small loss, small L, as I like to say, for a greater person, but it's hard to see that in a moment. We're in the midst of, like I was like to say, two pandemics. There's a medical pandemic and there's a civil rights pandemic. It's not just a movement, it's a pandemic. Because we wouldn't have been able to have a civil rights movement in this year had people not been home enough to watch all the things that happened with Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and having the space to understand it. Because I was moving at a mile a minute. There would be no Black wine professionals if it was 8 months ago. I was on a plane every month. I would have never had the time to sit and think, like, how do I get more people to have scholarship opportunities? How do I reach out to brands to have scholarship opportunities? I just wasn't in that space. I was just, like, grinding. But yeah. I'm looking at what's going on now and, like, how do I interject beauty in this? How do I work to create these things? And so many people are trying. I always say, I will take you imperfect over perfect, because imperfect means you're trying.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, obviously, I mean, SOMTV really wants to be a part of this. I mean, it's just what it is. But I also, you know, I think that is all this has to be done right. Mm-hmm. And I personally happen to know a lot of the people that are on the Black Wine Professionals. And I don't know that until you put them on a list of Black, I really thought of them that way. They're all pretty much just, they know their mm-hmm. shit. So I don't, you know, it's.
Yeah, but would you have known without the list, what I call the grape whisperers, would you have known people that work in grapes vine?
No, there's no question. And I'm only speaking to the people that I know that are on your list. I'm not talking about the others I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I think it's just the right thing to do. And I think also, I mean, from a business sense, Jesus criminy, I mean, it's a bigger audience. As I keep saying, it's like, I don't know. I think we have to take all the tough stuff going on in the world and use it for positive. And it's got to, we'll go insane. You know, it's got to work. It's got to work. So I commend you enormously, you know, for this. Let's talk a little bit about some wine moments you've had and kind of, because I want to take this to how do you stay positive about wine and what wine moments keep moving you forward? And I think, you know, obviously, if you've seen the films, you know the wine moments that I've had. What wine moments have you had that keep you in this world despite the discouragement? But I mean, this is fun. I mean, right now we're talking about this heavy shit.
Yeah.
But it's a fun world. I mean, we're talking about tough stuff.
And I will tell you, like, I'm very blessed. Like, I think of wine moments in, like, 98, having this barbecue, Texas brisket. If we're talking currently, I think of April 2016. I am in the Haute Villers region of Champagne after looking at literally the tomb of Dom Perignon. I'm with my friend Claire, and she's like, we should plan a group trip and we should do a black tie dinner in the cellars of Moët. And I'm looking at her like, what? You know, kind of like, what are you talking about? And literally a year later, we did it. And a year later, we repeated that. And to see 20 plus beautiful faces of Black people in the cellars of Moët for a black tie dinner, where they're pouring this Moët that you're not going to find on the shelves out of magnums. I think of those moments are like, wow, we created this. We created this opportunity. I think of being in Alan Tejo and, you know, Haddad de Severus, and I'm thinking these beautiful wines I get to taste. I'm thinking of last year at Printemps de Champagne. You know, my friend Allison was like, we got to go to Printemps. We got to go to Printemps. And we're there. And I tasted over 400 wines in a week, 400 champagnes in a week. You know.
How do you have teeth left?
Well, you spit. And I did a video and I showed what it was like to spit. And, you know, people were like, oh, my God, you're spitting champagne. And it was rough.
Just the acid. I mean, that'll
clear your teeth. Like, I came back and my dentist was like, you need to take like a month off of like no wine. I was like, okay, that's gonna happen at the end of 20. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, we're all gonna have dentures. You know,
we're all gonna have them. All of us. I think of that. I think of being before I even moved into wine in 2010. You know, going to the World Cup in South Africa, sitting with these amazing South African producers in, you know, Stellenbosch and Cape Winelands and all that in South Africa in 2010, I wasn't even writing about wine and just having this conversation with Stephen Satterfield. And we're just talking about wine and we're just talking about drinking at a time that this wasn't the same space, right? But I'm like continents away. And I think of those times and I go, I'm a very blessed person to have experienced those. Some of those I haven't even really written about. I just kind of was like, I've had those, right? And but I also sometimes think about, I'm in Mexico and I bring a case of bubbly to like a woman's retreat. And people are like, we're staying at this great resort. They have champagne. I'm like, they don't have this champagne. And I bring like a case in my like check luggage of all my favorite champagne. And we're in the pool and I'm just talking about champagne, popping bottles. And the guys at the resorts are like, let me bring you the glasses. I think of those things. And I think that, and to me, those things sustain me.
It's so important. It's so important because I don't think a lot of people who are not in the wine industry, and I don't even mean like they're reps for a company or they're bartenders or they're servers or somms. I'm talking just peripherally, which, you know, or, you know, it's a grind. I mean, it's
a grind. It's hard.
You're tortured by good stuff too. That's the weird part is you're, you know, it's long dinners. You're not complaining. It's just tiring. It's just a long grind. So, and then on top of it, the stuff, you know, obviously you have had to deal with for different reasons than I certainly have. You know, I just think it's important to remind people that there are these reasons you go, this is why I want to live in this world. I want to keep staying here. And that's good. I never intended to, like I said, with this pod, I never meant to talk to you about any of this stuff. I mean, I thought we would talk about bubbles and champagne and what you like. I mean, I think you're on a short list of people who know the most about champagne that I know. And
here's how you want to learn about champagne. Drink it exclusively for a month. Every day, get a different champagne. And I know it's costly. I am not one of those people that's like, oh my God, that sounds so pretentious. No, it's costly. And I guarantee you, in 2 weeks, you will know more about champagne if you drink from different regions.
All right, let's take the last 3 minutes. Let's talk about champagne because I want to do this. Oh, tell me about some champagne people should buy, try.
Okay,
stuff that's easy to find, stuff not, stuff expensive.
I'm a big expensive is that whole word got to change, right?
Okay,
good juice means good juice. Good people. I am a huge fan of Cedric Musset. He is a very Pinot Meunier.
Yeah,
Champagne has, you know, the majority is three grapes: Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Pinot Meunier. He is Meunier deep, deep, deep. I'm a big fan of Morgaine. I personally, a lot of people, you know, I drink a lot of champagne, and I don't want to like I drink a lot of Skernik champagne, which is an importer because I think they have one of the best books of champagne out. And I think when you drink growers, and I'm not against big houses, because when I say that, people are like, oh, you know, no, I love big houses. You know why I love big houses? You have to know where champagne has started in order to know where it is going.
Also, it's pretty remarkable what they do from a standpoint of volume and quality. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
The fact that they can produce consistency after 15 months on the lees, year after year after year after year, you have to appreciate them. So I don't get mad at those. I always say, start with those and then branch out. Big fan of Bill Cossamon. I love the rosé. I think the Sauvignon is one of the best out on the market. But
I'm with you. Their rosé is wonderful, too, as far as
rosé. Oh, my gosh.
It's expensive now, though. Jeez.
Well, that's not anything. That's not their fault. That is a whole, you know, something we don't want to talk about on this podcast at the time. Has to do with
that's another show. We'll talk about the bullshit and wine pricing.
But I do think there is more great champagne coming to the U.S. for people to have a lot of choices. I will say, seek out a smaller wine store that is local to you as a person to discover what they're finding. because
there's plenty of Grand Cru champagnes you can get for $35 a bottle. There's
plenty of Grand Cru. You can get Lallier, which I think is a great producer out of IE. There is Le Menil, which is not, you know, is a cooperative that actually grows grapes, but they decide to come together, produce a champagne. You can find them, but I think it's up to us as a consumer to do the work to promote them.
Yeah, well, also, you know, you do the work with your wallet, you know?
You do the work with your wallet. Like, if you're going to vote with your dollars on food, you got to vote with your dollars on wine.
I got to say, we're out of time, but I think you are. Oh, my God,
how are we out of time? I know, it's just.
Well, because your husband has got he's got a fork on his Harley here.
He'll be like, well, did you say that on a podcast? I'm like, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Your husband, for everybody, I'm saying it right now, her husband is a Harley and he's got to work on it.
He's like working on his sound system for the past month and it has been very loud.
Yeah.
And well, I would normally continue the conversation, but you wouldn't even be able to hear me.
No. So we're out of time and please kiss your husband and thank him for the amount of time he's given us.
Thank you guys so much.
We're going to do this again.
We want to do it. We need a part two. You know what? We need a part two on just how I'm bubbly. Uh-huh. We just need to have a conversation, not about like what I'm doing and all that. We just need to have a conversation about bubbly.
Okay, great. Great. Yes. I have a feeling it'll bleed into other things.
California, let me tell you, I've been getting some great California bubbly that is insane that I just want to talk about.
Give me one bottle. One bottle before we give me one California bubbly.
So I got to give you two bottles.
Okay.
I got to give you two bottles. Acquiesce out of Lodi. They make.
Out of Lodi?
Oh, yeah. They do Picpou Blanc. Traditional method bubbly. Oh, Jason, I know. You're probably shocked. I said Lodi.
I love this. No, I can't wait to try this. It's amazing. Picpou. And then,
Pine Ridge. Makes this beautiful Chenin Blanc Viognier blend, traditional still wine. They decided to actually make in a bubbly form.
Okay, I'm in.
That's what I'm saying. The rise of American sparkling wines is going to be insane. And there's so much I want to talk about, but I just literally, we don't have enough time.
All right, shit. We're talking about American sparkling wine next time. This is getting booked.
Let's do American sparkling wine next time because, oh my God. I mean, from American sparkling Albarino. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay. I'm in. This is what we're drinking next time we talk. So let's get some bottles in front of us.
Let's get some bottles. I'll talk to people. I'll send you an email this week and we'll make this happen.
Julia, I wish I was near you. I would hug you. You're the best. I would hug
you too. So thank you so much.
All right, we will talk soon, and you behave yourself and tell your husband thank you.
I'm a habitual line stepper. I'm going to try.
All right. Bye. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to the SOMTV podcast. Don't forget to go to SOMTV.com and subscribe. And if you do subscribe and you use any of the apps, leave us a nice rating. We really appreciate that. People see that, and it's important to us. Sip Trip is coming October 1st. And my next podcast will be with the host of that show, Jeff Porter. If you're New York City based, you already know who this guy is. Very funny, very smart guy. And this show is going to blow people away. It's really, really great. All right, until then, drink something good.